You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
It's DCR.
Rizzo serves the ball to center field. Gallo launches this ball deep to right field and goal.
Rizzo pummels one to right. It is gone.
So Gallo a couple of days ago, Anthony Rizzo yesterday.
Mm-hmm. You have to go all in to try to give yourself the best chance to compete while you have that championship window open. If you're the Yankees, you're in that same boat. This is the time that you have to go for it.
But if the Yankees do want to give themselves the best chance to get into October this year, they can't stop now.
This is DCR on 98.7 ESPN.
Hour three on a Friday morning, DCR, Dan Grasso, Chris Kenny, hanging out with you here on 98.7 ESPN. And yeah, a little buster time right now as we go out to the guest line. And DCR on 98.7 ESPN is presented by Progressive Insurance. Want to bring on our ESPN insider. It's Buster Olney with the trade deadline coming up at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Buster, Dan, and Chris, thanks for getting up early. How are you, my friend?
I am fired up. What a great trade deadline. All these big names moving all over the place. A lot of stuff still on the board. After yesterday, I just cannot believe the Red Sox didn't find a way to get Anthony Rizzo. There was no player who was a better fit for any team than Rizzo was for the Red Sox. And the idea that the Yankees swooped in and grabbed him, and not for their top prospect, it's a head-scratcher for me as to why the Red Sox didn't finish that deal.
Well, reportedly, they pivoted to Kyle Schwarber, a little bit different. And, of course, he's got to get healthy here, so at least that's a lefty bat if possible. But, Buster, I agree with you. I mean, think about it. Like, if the deadline had come and gone already and we were finished, I think that there was enough moves that were made, certainly, that would give us enough to chew on. But the fact that we have until 4 o'clock this afternoon with more head-scratchers probably still to come, it's going to be fantastic here. How about the Yankees? They bring in the two left-handed bats here, one in each of the last 2 days, in Gallo and Rizzo. How much of an upgrade do you think this is for their playoff chase this year?
Well, they certainly have checked a lot of boxes. Adding the left-handed hitters, adding the balance to their lineup, adding in Anthony Rizzo, someone who has experience in a big market playing in big games. I don't think there's any question they've upgraded their offense. And I got to tell you, too, I mean, not only the Yankees, but some of the other teams that have been making moves, you love the fact that people are trying to win. The last 10 years, people have in baseball have been really upset about the amount of tanking that's gone on. And in the Yankees' case, let's face it, their chances for winning the division are basically nil. Like, they probably are not going to catch the Red Sox. They know that in their front office. They're playing, they're upgrading their team for the opportunity to make one of the two wild cards and to play in a one-game winner-take-all elimination game. That's what they invested their resources in, and there probably would be, use the phrase by my late great friend Kevin Towers, the propeller heads who would say that's bad math. Why would you do that? But I respect the fact that the Yankees are stepping up and saying, yeah, it's a small window, but with Gerrit Cole, with Giancarlo Stanton, right in the peaks of their careers, we're paying them a lot of money, a lot already committed to this pot. We're going to do what we can to get better. And I wouldn't rule out the possibility they do more before we hit the deadline today.
Exactly, Buster. And I was going there because they bought over Anthony Rizzo. He's going to play first base. So, I mean, clearly that presents an opportunity for them to flip Luke Voit. What happens to him, and what are the potential trade targets for the Yankees before the deadline this afternoon?
I got to believe that their focus would be on pitching. And so maybe a parallel move, with another team, for example, a reliever. or some back end starter, somebody like a number four, number five. And look, I think by the end of the day, you're going to see a ton of relievers move, you know, for a lot of contenders. I wish, you know, I had front burner specific names, but I think those are things that are going to develop as we go through the day. And, you know, just teams decide, look, we're going to put this guy out there. We're going to put that guy out there. But I just based on my conversations last night with the Yankees people, they are grinding. And they're now that they're, you know, committed to trying to upgrade this group, I think they'll still be out there trying to do some things.
The luxury tax number is something that certainly the Yankees have been mindful of here for the last, yeah, you know, couple of seasons. And by unloading the relief pitchers to Cincinnati a couple of nights ago, that gave them a little bit more flexibility. And the fact that the Cubs are picking up the remainder of Rizzo's contract for the rest of the year gives them some more affordability here as 4 o'clock approaches. Do you expect them to still be straddling that line with the number buster, or can you see Hal Steinbrenner tell Brian Cashman, you know what, if there's a move that's substantially going to improve this club, shoot, we'll go right past that number if it means giving us a winner?
We have no indication that Hal Steinbrenner's given the okay to go over 210, and I think you framed it perfectly in terms of the deals they've made, how they made them, staying under the luxury tax threshold. They've made it this far, and we've only got a few hours to go, and I think that it's clear Hal is devoted to this. And if you want to step back and look at that from 30,000 feet, think about this. The Yankees' payroll this year will be about what the same as it was in 2004. And I'm sure there are going to be Yankee fans who are not happy about that. But it clearly was a something that was really important for Hal going into the year to duck back under the luxury tax threshold. And I know, you know, Brian Cashman well enough to know that he believes that, look, if you put $210 million team together, you know, or $206 million team together, you should be playing better than the way we've played so far.
Buster, listen, I know there's a lot of news about the trade deadlines and potential targets, but I can't ignore what I saw yesterday from the Yankees getting drubbed by the Rays 14-0. Now, they did get the series win, but one of the disturbing trends that I've been seeing from this team is them losing Gerrit Cole starts. I mean, in the last six starts from Gerrit Cole, the Yankees are 2-4. They're 10-11 in Gerrit Cole starts on the season, and Gerrit Cole feels like he's trending in the wrong direction. Over the six-game span, he's got a 5.35 ERA. I know that they're making these moves to try to put themselves in position to contend for the postseason, but if Gerrit Cole's not right, this team has no shot. So I got to ask you, what is the feeling around baseball about what's going on with Gerrit Cole and why the Yankees can't win his starts?
And the fact is that, you know, you'd be lying to say anything other. It's an open question, not only in the Yankees organization, but in other organizations, you know, how steeply he's been affected by the sticky substance crackdown. You know, is he just a completely different pitcher without having the ability to have something to spin a baseball? You know, I can't tell you exactly, you know, what Gerrit Cole was using before. I can't tell you, you know, how, you know, what pitches it affected specifically, but in terms of his pitch use, in terms of his performance, it's night and day from the, you know, before the crackdown and after. And that's just a fact. And you're right about, you know, the fact that, you know, he hasn't pitched well since the deadline or since that time. In this, when we look at the Yankees for this year, you know, obviously Brian Cashman, Aaron Boone, because they're in positions of making decisions, they're going to get a ton of scrutiny. Bottom line is that most of the Yankees players have not performed up to the back of their baseball cards. Mm. And Gerrit Cole in the last 2 months is absolutely an example of that.
Talking baseball with Buster Olney here on ESPN, guest on DCR Pier via the Goodyear Hotline. Let's flip over to the Mets here, Buster. You know, this series against the Atlanta Braves, again, look, they lose 3 out of 5. This Mets team, I think, is in first place more by default than anything else because the division is so bad here. And it's obvious that they can use some reinforcements when it comes to the starting pitching. Do you expect significant trade activity for the Mets by 4 o'clock this afternoon? Or is it going to be a small move here, a small move there? And are they just going to still insist on being too reliant on their injured players getting healthy as opposed to bringing in reinforcements from another club?
I think they're going to do something. I asked an executive this morning and with a text, hey, tell me by the end of the day, where does Craig Kimbrel land and where does Chris Bryant land? And his answer back was Kimbrel goes to the Giants and Bryant goes to the Mets. I think the fact that, you know, we learned yesterday that the Mets have talked to other teams about J.D. Davis, made him available. I mean, that's one more clue into, you know, how they're thinking about third base, you know, and looking for alternatives. Chris Bryant, for months we've been talking about him as a possible connection with the Mets, and I think that absolutely stands. I think that, you know, they're one of two teams going into these last hours under the most pressure to do something. We got some insight from Steve Cohen with that tweet that he sent out, what was it, you know, 10 days ago or so, when he posed clearly trying to explain to the fan base what his thinking was, what the thinking of the front office was. You know, would you rather pay high prices now or wait till later when the prices get more realistic? I think that's what the Mets have been waiting for. I would say this. If we get through the trade deadline and the Mets don't do something significant, and then they somehow, you know, as the Braves get Travis d'Arnaud back and Waskar and Noah back, you know, if the Phillies, you know, are the team that land Kimbrel today, and the Mets lose the division, the fan base will go absolutely nuts, absolutely crazy.
Buster, Javi Baez is another name that's kind of been linked to the Mets, and he came out earlier this week and said that, you know, Francisco Lindor being there was something that was attractive to him, and that he's the only guy that he would consider a position change and moving to second base for. Do you expect him to be in the mix in those conversations that the Mets are having with the Cubs or trade talks?
Yeah, now what I heard around the edges about the Cubs is that Baez is the guy that they are most likely to keep among these core 2016 players. But, you know, as today evolves, let's say Chris Bryant winds up with the Giants instead of the Mets, and let's say the Mets, you know, suddenly become aggressive. Baez is a free agent in the fall. The Cubs want to keep him, you know, want to sign him long-term. They could still do that, you know, get trade him to the Mets and get him back. I thought all along that Baez potentially would be a fit for the Mets, and because of his positional flexibility, you let him fill in at short while Lindor's out. You move him to another spot. And the fact is that, you know, after Bryant got off to that amazing start first 6 weeks, Javi Baez has outplayed him. Like, he's been really good. He's been hitting with power. He's obviously a big swing and miss guy, but there are a lot of things that he brings to the table. And I think he is such a big stage type player. I think he would love to play with the Mets and love to play right alongside Lindor.
Let's just say real quick, for argument's sake, Buster, you mentioned Bryant, and you're right. First couple of months, he was great. He was almost like playing at his old MVP level, and he's gone south since. How much of it, though, do you think it's a case of Bryant maybe pressing a little bit, gripping the bat a little tight? Because he's had to deal with the trade questions probably for, you know, since day one. And as he got closer and closer to July and the deadline, you know, he's had to hear these even louder. Of course, that's all they asked him at the All-Star game there. How much do you think Bryant, though, could just benefit from a change of scenery, knowing where he's going to land? And then it relaxes him and frees up his mind a little bit to where he can go out there and play like the guy that we saw the first couple of months of the season.
There's no doubt about it. I think that Bryant and Rizzo are two great candidates for change of scenery, because I think it had gotten to the point, and Bryant actually gave voice to this in an interview he did during the wintertime, where he talked about how it wasn't as much fun. I think, you know, when we look at the 2016 Cubs, they win the World Series, and there was expectations it was going to be a dynasty, and that never took shape. And I think it was because it became hard to be those guys, right? You're playing amid expectation. You know, the fans, you know, are hungry for another title after you win one. You know, trade rumors, because Bryant didn't sign a long-term deal, started, you know, within 2 years after they won the World Series. And it got very businesslike. I think for Rizzo, who had contract talks that were far apart in spring, that fell apart, and you get the sense that there were some, you know, not great feelings between he and the team as he's leaving. I think these guys are going to absolutely love going to a different place where there's a different type of expectation. And maybe, you know, there'll be a sort of a rebirth of that fun that Bryant referred to.
Buster, last night the Dodgers make a huge splash. I mean, they're trading with the Nationals. They bring over Max Scherzer and Trey Turner. It feels like Corey Seager is going to get squeezed out. What ultimately happens to him? Where do you think he ends up?
Well, I think this is the Dodgers building a safety net in case Seager leaves, because he's represented by Scott Boras. He's a free agent in the fall, and we know with Boras clients, they almost always go to the team that bids the most. And the Dodgers, as they move forward, have to decide how they're going to spend their money. And so by signing Trey Turner now, it sets them up where no matter what happens with Corey Seager, they've got a shortstop for 2022. I think in the short term, in terms of losing playing time, I think a really interesting case could be in that of Cody Bellinger. You know, I've seen people say that, you know, the Dodgers go from being, favorites to win the World Series to being prohibitive favorites because of this deal. I actually think this deal addresses real needs in this moment. Mookie Betts has not been the same player that he was last year. He's had all these nagging injuries. He's on the injured list right now. And Cody Bellinger has absolutely fallen off the face of the earth as an offensive player. We saw that regression last year. Guys, he's hitting like in the 160s.
Mm-hmm.
Like he is not close to being what he was when he was an offensive player. So, Chris, maybe the guy who winds up getting squeezed out in Dave Roberts' day-to-day lineup decisions could be Cody Bellinger.
Wow.
Absolutely right. And I mean, forget about that throw he made the other night, which cost them the game in San Francisco. I mean, thank God there was netting, Buster. That would have taken somebody out in the upper deck with that throw that he made to third base there. I mean, my goodness. Buckle up, though. It should be fun over the next several hours. Thanks for a couple of minutes, Buster. Appreciate it. Enjoy the madness here today.
Thanks, guys. It'll be fun.
All right. There's Buster Olney of ESPN talking about the trade deadline. Chris, did you see that throw the other night with Bellinger on, what was it, Monday night, I think it was, in San Francisco against the Giants when he was playing first base and he tried to throw across the diamond to third to get the runner, and he just... When I tell you he airmailed the throw, he didn't do it. That doesn't do it justice. Like it would might have taken out somebody in the upper deck if there was no netting. I mean, what the hell was he doing? But it allowed the go ahead and eventual winning run to score.
I tell you what, the Giants are a huge surprise. Nobody saw that team coming. Nobody saw that team coming this year. I mean, the Dodgers and the Padres, we expected them to be where they're at, but I mean, my goodness, what they're doing out in San Francisco.
Legit. They're legit, and it's no longer it's early. Let's see what they do. They're legit. They're going to the playoffs. The question is it going to be as the division champ or is it going to be as a wild card? There's no doubt about that one.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Big blockbuster in the NBA last night, CC, where the Lakers, not standing pat, making sure that, you know, this first-round playoff exit from this past postseason run does not happen again. Now, only time will tell if this is an ill-fated move or not, but it certainly is going to bring the name recognition and the star value. They bring in Russ, Mr. Triple-Double, from D.C. So now the big three is going to be LeBron, AD, and Russ. It's going to be fun. Do I think that this is going to be perfect basketball? Do I think that there is going to be bumps in the road or no bumps in the road? The answer is definitely not. I wouldn't exactly put the Lakers back in the finals next year, that's for sure, because, you know, it's cool and they have histories and the back of the cards and everything with the stats. I just don't know if this is going to be the perfect fit.
Dan, you're hurting me right now, man. You're killing me right now because
I'm just being honest with you.
I'm a Lakers fan, man, and I looked at this move and I said my first reaction was, okay, the Lakers are bringing in another guy that can help with shot creation, that can get into the paint, that can be able to kick the ball out and get guys opportunities to knock down open looks like that. That's something that they missed last year. They didn't have that. Like, I mean, it was LeBron James, and if he wasn't orchestrating the offense, they really didn't have anybody that could set everybody else up. And so I think bringing over Russell Westbrook helps with that. The question is, how do those two work together when they're on the floor at the same time? You got to think that Russ is going to defer to LeBron James. Every team LeBron James has played on, he's been the point guard. So, I mean, you know, that has to be what the setup is. But, I mean, you did need to add somebody that can help with shot creation, and Russell Westbrook should help in that regard. Russell Westbrook surprised me in the second half of last year. Like, I mean, you got to remember, there was a point in time in the second half of last NBA regular season where Russell Westbrook was on an absolute tear and the Washington Wizards were on a tear. So hopefully he can be more like that version that we saw and less like the one we saw in the first half. And if that's what he's bringing out to the Lakers, then I'm all for it.
Here's the problem, though. You know, when you look at the Lakers, right, they were not a great three-point shooting team.
No.
Russell Westbrook is not a great three-point shooter.
Not at all.
For all the other things that he brings to the court, he's not. I mean, he's subpar. I mean, even in today's NBA world, when it comes to shooting three, so he's not helping you there. Which means Is that really going to help this team space the floor on the offensive side of things? I'm not sure about that. Is he a guy that's going to attack the paint to the same extent that he used to, you know, let's say 4 or 5 years ago? I don't think he's that same type of guy. So I just wonder, is he somebody that's just going to be getting in the way, or is he somebody that's going to actually be able to provide a little bit of a service for you and what you're trying to do to let those two other guys run the show when it comes to the offensive side of things? I like I said, I'm very, very skeptical that this is going to pay dividends like they hope it will.
Well, I mean, I'm hoping that you're going to get the best version of Russell Westbrook just because it represents another opportunity for him to compete for a championship. He's going back home to L.A., so, I mean, and playing alongside LeBron James, so there has to be, you know, a clear level of deference that he has to LeBron. So, I mean, I feel like they have the opportunity. I get what you're saying about being able to space the floor, but they had to find somebody else that could help in terms of contributing on the offensive end because Kyle Kuzma and Montrezl Harrell weren't doing that consistently. Like, Montrezl Harrell eventually became a ghost when it came to the rotation for the Lakers. So
I was surprised about, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it just, they weren't getting very much production out of those guys. So I can understand from the standpoint that Russell Westbrook isn't a great knockdown shooter. And, you know, the theory with playing with LeBron is you got to be a really good shooter. But, I mean, at some point they had to do something to try to bring in somebody else that could share some of that workload on the offensive end with LeBron because they were asking him to do too much. I mean, LeBron James is 36 years old. Yeah, I get it. He's the best player in the NBA. But, I mean, at some point you got to bring in somebody else that can help shoulder that burden of being able to create shots on the offensive end. And they just didn't have that element in their offense. So I understand why they went out and made the move. Is it a perfect fit? No. But is it something that I think was necessary? Absolutely.
Are you, you know, and by the way, the contract for Westbrook, $44.2 million this year, following season player option for $47.
Who cares? Who cares? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I mean, the Lakers are all in for the next 2 years.
No doubt. Yeah. Because as long as LeBron is here, that's what you have to do. But I'm just saying, those numbers, though, are just insane. You know what I mean? Like, you let those numbers register, like $44 and $47 million for one guy. You know? Insane.
That NBA money is different, Dan. It's different. That, you know, NBA money is different.
Remember we used to joke around, too, like about, like, telling kids, like, oh, you know what? You really want to strike it rich as an athlete? Go practice your baseball. You know, like, the baseball players making all the crazy money. The heck with that. It's the NBA. NBA is where it's at.
No, I mean,
the
question NBA, about it.
You could be a scrub. You could be the 10th, 11th guy on the team, and you're still going to be pulling in, like, $5 million a year.
Oh, yeah. Mid-level exception. You're talking about
minimum
double-digit millions.
I mean, it's crazy. Look, I think I like Russ just as – now, you're a fan. I'm not a Laker fan. I'm an NBA fan.
Mm-hmm.
So as somebody who doesn't have a dog in the fight, I look at this situation and say, yeah, I think there's more value for the league and for popcorn value having Russ on the Westbrook to see, or having Russ on the Lakers to see what kind of dynamic that's going to present here. Certainly more than if he's in D.C. And, you know, I wonder about in D.C. now, does Bradley Beal still want out? Because remember, whether or not you feel he and Westbrook got along is one thing. But remember, with Beal, he's upset over the fact that they hired Wes Unseld to be the head coach as opposed to giving Sam Cassell a longer look. That's the guy that he wanted, who's now in Philadelphia as an assistant. So now that Russ is gone, are they going to smooth things over with Bradley Beal and say, all right, we're building around you. It's going to be your team. You want to even have a little say in personnel like Aaron Rodgers does now? You know, like, be our guest, but we need you. It's better for the league having Russ in L.A. than it is, I think, in Washington.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. But as far as Bradley Beal goes, I feel like Washington needs to go ahead and tear it all the way down. Like, I get that Brad Beal wants to ride it out and he wants to be a part of the turnaround. But, I mean, at some point, it's just like, all right, what we're doing is not working. We're not bad enough to be at the top of the lottery and we're not good enough to actually get into a real playoff series. So it just seems like it makes sense to go ahead and sell off Brad Beal and bring back a haul of picks. You can start from zero right there. And then if you're Brad Beal, you have an opportunity to catch on with a team that actually has a chance to contend. I mean, Brad Beal is one of the best pure scorers out there in the NBA right now today. And the fact that he's wasting away in the nation's capital, like, it's, I don't know, man. It's just one of those things. I want Brad Beal to have a change of scenery just because I think he's a really, really good player. And people don't know how good he is because of the team that's surrounding him.
I agree. And look, I'll be as guilty of it as anybody else. I was never really a big Bradley Beal guy. And I've come around certainly over the last couple of years. And you know, he's
well, he hadn't given you any choice when he's dropping 50-piece nuggets left and right.
That's the problem. You have to go all in then, right? Like, if he's doing that, you say, all right, this guy's legit. And to me, I know, look, Washington, they made it interesting there down the stretch, playing tournament, all that stuff, got into the postseason, whatever. But big picture-wise, if you're talking about tearing it down and rebuilding this thing, I think it's cool that it's a win for them, Chris, that they still somehow found a way to unload the John Wall contract when they did. Because to me, that's as bad a contract as there is in the entire NBA right now.
Yeah, that's really bad. That's a really bad deal.
It's insane. For the production that he's been able to give whatever team he's on since he signed that extension, it's like next to nothing. So the fact that Washington was able to punt that down the road to somebody else, that's a win for them.
Oh, yeah. And then they got Russ back, and then they traded Russ, and they got other young players back. So, yeah, I get where you're coming from. It makes sense. But, I mean, Washington has just got to continue to turn that roster over, man. They're going nowhere fast. But what does that mean? That means that they're going to be – there's potentially another star that's going to be on the market this summer in Brad Beal. And it'll be really interesting to see where he ends up. I mean, you could be talking about Brad Beal being out there, Damian Lillard being out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll see what happens with Karl Anthony Towns up in Minnesota. I mean, there's the potential for a lot of guys to be out there that, you know, the Knicks could potentially be in play for.
Hey, nobody in the NBA wants to hear this personnel-wise, because we're coming right off the draft and they put in so much time with scouting these prospects and making sure that they get some guys who they think they could develop and flourish in their own team. But, I mean, look, it's a dirty little secret. Everybody knows the best way, if you really want to set your program off and running, you go get a disgruntled superstar.
You have to.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
Hey, Chris, did you know that Jets football's back? Because lock in your seats to see the green and white at MetLife Stadium and get ready to bring back the noise this season. For tickets, visit nyjets.com/tickets and be listening to the Michael Kay Show today for your chance to score a pair of New York Jets season tickets. I mean, you should be listening to the show anyways. But
if you need
any added incentive, that's not bad added incentive. Let's be real.
The tickets are just the icing on the top of the cake.
Right.
Yeah, that's all that is.
It's like the least we can do for you for listening to the show.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
That's it.
And the Jets are going to win more than two games this year. I'm going out on a limb.
Hopefully. Hopefully.
Going out on a limb.
Hopefully that's the case. Hopefully that's the case. But, I mean, you talked about it a little bit earlier, though. I mean, yeah. Zach Wilson is surrounded with a much better supporting cast than Sam Darnold ever was. I mean, going out and getting Corey Davis and Keelan Cole and drafting Elijah Moore and Michael Carter and, you know, making sure that you fortify the offensive line, making the move to bring over Morgan Moses, and then drafting Elijah Vera Tucker. Like, all of those things are only going to help in terms of Zach Wilson being able to figure out how to play the quarterback position. And if you get him off to the right start and you develop him properly, the thought is, because he's the second overall pick and he has all of these physical gifts, he's going to then be able to elevate your team and elevate your program. So, I mean, it's got to be better. It can't be much worse than it was during the Adam Gase era. But, I mean, you are talking about making sure you take the proper steps to develop your franchise quarterback, because if you do, then you've got stability at the most important position in all of team sports for the next decade and a half.
100%. Couldn't say it any better myself. And, you know, you mentioned some of the wide receivers. The wide receiver position, hands down, is the single most improved area of this football team from last season to this year. I mean, you're going to probably see it, you know, like the first preseason game or whatever. If you haven't, I mean, you know it already. But like the first time in that game where they flash up the depth chart of the wide receivers they have on this team, the thing that's going to hit you in the head, if you're a Jet fan, you're going to say, oh my God, like, look at those names. That is actually an NFL caliber depth chart of wide receivers. Like, and think back to the last time you could say that about the Jets. But you look at some of these names, like you said, you can almost go five deep now, you know, with the Corey Davises, you know, Jamison Crowder, who they brought back. Elijah Moore is going to be a stud. Denzel Mims, who was the great hope last year as a second round pick. And I'll mention something about him here in just a second. And Keelan Cole, who people slept on when they signed him this offseason from Jacksonville. Keelan Cole has had a great offseason. He's going to factor in mightily to the plans here, I think, this year. You know, you got Berrios as a slot guy, too, so that's even six. They got a lot of options.
Yep.
The thing about Mims, I'll say this, and, you know, last year he was hampered by injuries. couldn't always put it together. He flashed, certainly, given the opportunities that he had. But this is a big season for Denzel Mims, because I think that his roster, not saying his roster spot is in jeopardy, but how this team values him and maybe what they're counting on from him this year, it's not as necessary as, let's say, what he needed to maybe do last year or what the hope was, because they've gone out there and now they've improved the position to where nothing is going to be handed to him this year, CeCe. He's going to have to literally go out there and earn it. And I will say this, he's a guy that now that he's taken that jump into year number two, and if he could put all the injury stuff behind him, he's also going to have to hit that playbook, if you know what I'm saying.
I understand.
A little, you know, inside the building type stuff. Now he's in his second offense in his second year, and at times that was a problem in year number one, in addition to the durability. Getting into the playbook, knowing your responsibilities, knowing your assignments. So Mims is going to have to go out there and act like a pro off the field in terms of getting ready to play ball, not just what happens on Sunday. It's going to be big for him. So watch what happens with Denzel Mims this year.
Well, no, I mean, you're absolutely right. And what you're speaking to is just a matter of being a professional, right? Like, there's got to be a certain degree of professionalism, and that's kind of been one of those things that's been lacking overall within the culture that's been in the building in Florham Park as far as the players are concerned. Like, you just don't have a lot of veteran guys. You don't have a lot of older guys. So the thought would be not only having Jamison Crowder in that room, but adding Corey Davis into that room and Keelan Cole will kind of show those young guys, okay, this is how you're supposed to go about your business as a pro. This is what you're supposed to be responsible for as a wide receiver. It's not enough for you to just know your job, but you got to know the job of all the other guys that are in the pattern as well, just so you know where you fit. And you can recognize that on the fly when you look at the different coverages that defenses are playing. You can be where you're supposed to be. I mean, that's what Denzel Mims has to do, because you got to be a reliable target for your quarterback. Like, when you're trying to develop a franchise quarterback, the guys around him got to know what they're doing too. Because if he's reading the playbook and trying to figure things out, and then all of a sudden you're not where you're supposed to be, all those things can kind of get screwed up, and it leads to nothing but bad things for your offense. So, again, you're right, Denzel Mims, this is a big year for him in terms of what the team is expecting from him and what that trajectory is going to look like moving forward. But, I mean, he's got to understand, like, you know, this is the NFL. You get paid for a reason. You got to be a professional, and you got to help your young quarterback out.
100%. 100%. DCR is presented by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. We talked a little bit about it earlier in the show. Last night with the draft and the Knicks, you know, not any pick that's going to necessarily blow you over as to, you know, and I was even watching the draft last night, and I was saying, Chris, it's like this is a weird feeling, because normally there's a lot more hype and a lot more anticipation for the draft from a local standpoint, because the Knicks are usually picking in the lottery. Mm-hmm. And now this time around, they were picking back at the end of the first round, and they traded back a couple of times. So they didn't actually make a pick until 25. And, you know, the NBA, they got to fix this, right? Because number 19 and number 21, who at the draft, Adam Silver is saying the New York Knicks select, and they got all the signage behind him, New York Knicks, New York Knicks. The guy goes up there, gets drafted, he puts a Knicks hat on. Neither one of those guys were going to the Knicks, because
not
we knew
all
before the pick that the Knicks made a trade, so it was other teams making the pick. It's so funny.
The kid
like
has got that draft day photo forever.
Got the draft day photo forever. And, like, do they keep the hat? Like, do they get to keep the Knicks hat, or do they got to give it back? You know what I mean? Is it like a souvenir? Like, how does that work?
I don't know. I have no idea. But you're absolutely right. It is a little bit ridiculous that the NBA, they can't adjust on the fly and get the kid the right draft hat for the team that he's going to go play for.
And just tell everybody. It's like, look, there was a trade made. This isn't them making the pick. It's somebody else. But when they finally did get a player that was actually going to stick around and be part of the organization, Quentin Grimes, 25th overall from Houston, a two guard. We were talking about it earlier in the show. This is a guy, you know, he helped Houston get to a Final Four this year. He's all about defense. He's all about rebounding. That was the MO of that Houston team this past year under Kelvin Sampson. And I think that a coach like Tom Thibodeau, who demands those things from his players, you look at a guy like Quentin Grimes and say, oh, he has those attributes. And yeah, he could shoot the ball too and score the basketball. Perfect for our basketball team. So that's something I think that the Knicks can take advantage of and tap in with this guy.
No question about it. And I'm just reading the write-up on the .com website from Jonathan Givony, and he was talking about how He's a 3-and-D guy that should be able to contribute immediately for the Knicks. And I think that's kind of what you want. You want to find role players that can fit into the core guys that you already have. Because, I mean, the Knicks were a playoff team. They were a team that was 10 games over 500, and they were actually able to host a home playoff series. So it's just one of those things where you want to find guys that can contribute, young guys that have upside, that have big potential, but also guys that have a high floor, because you realize you would like to have more talent on this roster, more guys that can be a factor. That's one of the things that we loved about what Tibbs did, is that he got the most out of the group that was here. But you do need to infuse this roster with more talent, and Quentin Grimes certainly fits that bill as one of those prototypical NBA wings. So we'll see what ends up happening with that. We'll see how he develops. But, I mean, from all of the things that I've read and a little bit I saw during the tournament, like the kid can play a little bit.
No, he can play. He's a good player, and we'll see if he can make that adjustment here to the next level. They end up with three guys in the second round. We mentioned the Lithuanian point guard, who's only 20 years of age. He's going to be a draft and stash guy, lefty. Let him develop overseas. Maybe you get something out of him. Miles McBride, though, from West Virginia, another point guard, 6'2", good value, at least at 36. That's what everybody's saying, that he was still around at that point in the draft. And another player that you hear, you know, analysts speak about is somebody who is prototypical for Tom Thibodeau. He's tough. You know, he's made to play for a coach like Tibbs. This is a dude who was a former quarterback, CeCe. So you want to bring that football mentality to the basketball floor. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. And look, West Virginia, you're playing for Bob Huggins. Bob Huggins, he's the same type of coach, you know, almost as Tibbs and what he demands out of his players. So I like that. And then you get Jericho Sims, who's a big from Texas, 6'10". See if there's some potential to tap into there. So, you know, this is kind of like uncharted territory for the Knicks and for the fans, right? I mean, having a draft to where you're coming off a playoff appearance, and yeah, now instead of trying to build something to where you can get just to that playoff level, well, no, it's we were at that playoff level. How do we ensure we get back there and then continue to grow from that point? And you hope that one or maybe multiple pieces that you got last night are going to be contributors to that moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, you're drafting guys, you know, I think with the Quentin Grimes pick, it was a guy that, okay, we've got a role for him already, but then the guys that you took in the second round, you're talking about guys that have huge upside. Like, and you want to see if you can actually develop them into guys that can eventually contribute to your club. But I mean, with the Knicks, where they're at right now and the moves that they made last night, to me, the biggest takeaway is they got that future first round draft pick. I mean, they continue to stockpile assets just in case they are, you know, down the road an opportunity presents itself when they can trade for a star that doesn't want to be in their current situation. Like, to me, that's the thing that amazes me about what Leon Rose is doing, because he's continuing to maintain cap flexibility and draft capital while adding talent onto the roster. It's really hard to do, but I mean, listen, this front office is getting that job done. And eventually you got to think that they're going to make a move. They're going to take a big swing at it. And based on the little things that they've done so far, it's giving me more and more confidence that when that right opportunity presents itself, they'll be in position to take advantage of it.
No doubt about it. Ian Begley, our pal from SNY, great job as a basketball insider there. He was reporting that the Knicks, you know, leading up to the draft, the whole pre-draft scouting process, that they considered making a move up into the top five.
Yep.
To see if they can get Jalen Suggs from Gonzaga, the point guard. And, you know, ironically, he ends up falling down to five. You know, this is a guy who most people felt would maybe even go as high as number two, CeCe. He goes down to the Orlando Magic at number five. That's a good pick for them. Really, really good value. But, yeah, I don't know. Given what it would have cost, given up draft choices, given up an R.J. Barrett to move up that high to get a guy who, yeah, he's got potential. Yeah, he could be a good player, but we just don't know it to be true. I'm kind of happy they didn't make the leap and they stood pat.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I mean, I also heard yesterday that they were considering trying to move up package 19-21 and move up a little bit into the lottery to see if they can get their hands on a Chris Duarte or a Davion Mitchell. None of those things materialized. And so I think that the Knicks did the next best thing. Like, if we can't get up to get a guy that we're in love with, we're going to trade back and find value and also continuing to add to the draft capital that we already have in future years. So I love what they did from a strategic standpoint, not necessarily with the player, but just from a strategy standpoint. Like, I think it's the right approach to take, because if you're not in love with guys, if you don't have convictions on guys, then you don't pull the trigger on those particular moves, that you go ahead and continue to try to slow build this thing until you have an opportunity to get guys that you want to, that you love, to add to this roster.
TCR is brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract and no compromise. Real quick, did you see, by the way, you see the move the Rangers made yesterday? Did you see that?
They're in the sell-off, aren't they?
Well, they brought in, they made a trade with Vegas, and they brought in Ryan Reeves.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that interesting? Well, Ryan Reeves is an enforcer. He's a tough guy. He's a fighter. He's one of the, you know, the few, when you think enforcer in the NHL, he's one of the couple of guys you think of. It's just funny how still that whole episode at the end of the season, the whole Tom Wilson thing,
mm-hmm.
where we had that episode where everybody dropped the gloves right at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
A lot of the moves that Chris Drury has made here in the offseason, going out there and beefing up.
They got to get tougher. They got to get tougher.
They kind of, you know, dropped hints that that was the direction they were looking to go. They talked about being dissatisfied with how the whole thing transpired. Well, they've made some moves, and Reeves certainly the top of the list, being one of those type of players to ensure that, hey, if that ever happens again, they're going to have a guy on the roster who's going to be able to deal with it, to where they were maybe missing that last year. I just thought that was interesting when I saw it. Damn, they went and got Ryan Reeves to bring in here. So they got a prize fighter.
Yeah, so is he the hockey equivalent of Vontaze Burfict? Is that what you're saying?
Basically.
Oh, okay.
But within the rules.
Within the rules? Okay.
Within the rules.
Gotcha.
Within the rules. All right, we got a few hours still till 4 o'clock today and the deadline. We talked a lot about the baseball today. Gut feeling. What do the Yankees do? Yankees able to bring in that arm? What do you think?
Yeah, I think they do. I think they bring in somebody to fortify their bullpen. I know that there's been some talk about Jose Berríos. I don't know that that's going to actually happen. I think that they'll ultimately...
I don't think it's going to help either.
Yeah, I think that they're actually going to go after somebody that can help in their bullpen. We'll see who that name ends up being, but there's no way that they're going to stand pat, because, I mean, there's no place for Luke Voit to play. He's suddenly become expendable for him,
yep,
with the Anthony Rizzo move, so it just makes sense for them to flip him for somebody that can help them right now try to make this postseason push. And if I was Brian Cashman, the bullpen would be the place that I'm looking, just because of how much work I've put on those guys over the first 4 months of the season. Like, you want your bullpen to be intact and to be ready to go once we get to the playoffs. That's supposed to be one of the strengths of this team. Right now, I mean, the bullpen, those guys are taking turns being really, really shaky. So I think you got to fortify that. You got to add another arm to that group. If they do that, I'll feel good about where the Yankees are at on the other side of the deadline.
And you know, you bring up Berríos, and he's a guy that this applies even for both teams, the Mets and the Yankees. And I think that they both could benefit and would benefit certainly from bringing in another starting pitcher. He's got great stuff. He's controllable, but here's the problem with Berríos. Is he a difference maker? No. He might be Minnesota's ace, or considered to be Minnesota's ace, but I don't think he's going to be that guy that's going to push you over the top. Post All-Star break in his career, he's got an ERA close to 5. Is that a guy that you're going to put all your trust in?
That's not good.
And we're not talking about like a couple of months. We're talking about like a guy's whole career. You know, a 4.84 ERA post All-Star break, that's going to give me some pause. So, yeah, it's a nice depth guy to have. It's somebody, not depth. I mean, he's going to get the ball, and you expect him to go out there and deliver. But if you're asking me, is this, you know, like you're getting Max Scherzer? No, of course not. You know, so I think you have to temper those expectations.
Let me ask you this question. Yeah. Let me ask you this question, Dan. Yeah. Is he a guy that you think could make a postseason start for the Yankees?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But you know what? We've seen this guy in the postseason. How many times against the Yankees?
It's not great. It's batting practice.
Right? It's batting practice.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a problem. I mean, Minnesota gets to the playoffs, and they, you know what, to themselves. And especially when the Yankees are the team in the other dugout. So, look, if you brought him here, to me, he's no better than a mid-rotation guy.
Yeah.
Now, look, you might look at the controllability and say that it's too good to pass up because he'd be back next year because he's still got another year on his contract, and you may want to have one eye on the future and say, yeah, it's all right, it's worth bringing this guy in here. But if you're saying, yeah, we're bringing him in and that's going to push us over the top to the playoffs, it's not going to happen.
So you're with me. You think that it's better to go after bullpen help than to actually go after Berríos.
For the Yankees, yes.
Yeah.
But the Mets, and see, here's the tricky part. Mets, I agree, they need a bat. And I'd be fine with Bryant. Like I said to Buster, I think change of scenery.
He's not a consolation prize. Chris Bryant is a former MVP.
But like a lot of people are saying, well, you know, hey, look at J.D. Davis's numbers the last couple of years. They're better than Chris Bryant's. Okay, yeah, but J.D. Davis is never going to win an MVP, which Chris Bryant did.
Yeah.
And I know that was still a handful of years ago, but Chris Bryant still has that in them. And I'm steadfast. I will die on this hill that Chris Bryant is going to turn it around once he's traded, and he's going to start resembling the guy that he was the first couple of months of the season, because it's going to free his mind. Now he doesn't have to worry about, where am I going? Where's my family going? Okay, I'm going to New York, or I'm going to Washington, or he's not going to Washington, but I'm going to Philly. You know, you can just relax a little bit. Dude, they're human beings just like you and I are.
Yeah.
And if we were dealing with those questions, like what's going to happen with our job? Where are we going to be working next month or next? It takes a toll on you, and you can't tell me that you don't think about it.
No, you absolutely do. But I mean, I think Chris Bryant fits the need for the Mets. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of Mets fans out there that would say, oh no, I think we're good at third base. We don't need Chris Bryant. I mean, Chris Bryant is clearly an upgrade over J.D. Davis. There's no question about that in my mind. And defensively, of course, he's light years ahead of J.D. Davis. J.D. Davis is a butcher over there on the corner.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, Chris Bryant, Javi Baez, I wouldn't have a problem with either one of those guys, but I think the Mets do have to add somebody to this lineup to give them a little bit more punch, man. I mean, because the lineup has not been what we expected them to be. Not preseason. Like coming into this year, it wasn't what we expected it to be. Now, you can explain that away with some of the injuries that they've dealt with, but I mean, I just feel like they, you know, we talked about the Yankees needing that shot in the arm, a little bit of energy. I feel like that Mets lineup needs some energy. I mean, you know, we talked about that series with the Braves, 5 games and you only score 11 runs. That's a problem. Like, they need to be able to bring in somebody that can help that offense a little bit. And I anticipate that they'll do that ahead of 4 o'clock today.
You would hope so. Definitely. It's time for our three stars. Let's turn over to our buddy Ray.
Three stars of DCR.
And I will say that I gave real serious consideration to Kelvin Benjamin just for the entertainment value. he ate too much, he was overweight, or he was stealing entire trays worth of food from the Giants facility and taking it home. No, that actually didn't happen. Let's be clear. That's not what happened. But he was the honorable mention. In fact, I'm going to go with
number three
to the great Brian Cashman, because he went from get rid of him to a star overnight on Twitter and getting the Rizzo and Gallo trades done. And, you know, I'm not going to be so quick to give out the flowers because, after all, as we've said repeatedly, this is your roster. You're the one who built this. And Aaron Boone was never really on the hot seat. You know, he was a lame duck manager to begin with. But Brian Cashman, he's making moves like a guy whose job is in trouble, even though I don't think he is.
Number two,
keeping with that theme, a guy who's finally getting the work, Zach Wilson. Way to get the contract hammered out, and hopefully the Jets have a presentable practice with him on their center, and nothing happens to him, because if it does, well, it's the Tom Moore thing.
God help us all.
We don't practice without
God help
team.
Us all.
Number one.
Dan Grosser, give yourself a round of applause. Excellent job stepping in on the fly on a Friday, mind you. You come in cold, off the bench. 4 days of the week passed. Bob Wischusen couldn't give us all of it, which, you know, I appreciate the four that we got from him, but I greatly appreciate the one that we got from you. Great job today, sir.
Oh, outstanding, thank you so much. Dan.
Thank
outstanding.
You.
We appreciate
thank
it, brother.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
You know,
it's been awesome.
Great to be here.
It's been awesome.
CC, we don't get to do this that often, but let's make it a point to do it again soon. What do you say?
Sounds good to me, my man.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.